Hello, and welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, part of the Jesuits in Britain. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. So I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s, and I live in a young adult Jesuit community in London. Every week, I'll meet a new guest who tells me about something they've experienced which changed their life forever. And by talking about the things they'd wished they'd known at the time, we'll explore the idea that God isn't all things, and we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. So today I'm speaking to Sophia, who converted to being Catholic in her mid-20s. She then went through a formal process of discerning with the Carmelites, who are a religious order, before deciding that that's not what God was calling her to. She talks in her episode about her journey that she's been on, and she speaks about being ready to go where God is calling you. So, Sophia, tell me about yourself.
Hello, I'm Sophia. I'm 32. I'm a convert. I was received into the Catholic Church in 2018. I've got a master's in theology from Trinity College Dublin. Then I worked as a research assistant for a professor on the depictions of the Old Testament in Church of Ireland stained glass. Then the pandemic hit, so I moved back to the UK and I started working for CAFOD. And during that time too, I began discerning a vocation with the Discalced Carmelites. Discerned it wasn't for me, went and did a bit of traveling and learning Spanish, and now I'm back at CAFOD and doing some volunteer work with various church organizations.
You obviously converted to being Catholic, but did you grow up having a faith background?
Yes, I was raised Baptist Pentecostal, which was quite fire and brimstone, quite scripturally fundamentalist, and also very prayerful. But there were some things that I disagreed with, and I don't think my formation was necessarily very good. We weren't allowed to question too much. And so I went away from the faith when I was about 11 or 12, so when I started secondary school. I'd say I was quite Pascalian after that, so I'd say, just in case there is a God, I'll say that there is a God. But my faith was very superficial. Maybe I'd pray if I had an exam or something like this. Then I became an Anglican in my early 20s based on a prayer experience. And then I did some more theological and biblical research and just had many more faith conversations, which led me to become Catholic.
How old were you when you became Catholic?
Oh, 26. I just turned 26. Was it 27? 27.
26, 27,
mid-20s, yeah.
And so what were you doing at that time?
Oh, I was doing the very millennial thing of taking 1 or 2 years out in my mid-20s to go traveling. So I think I'm probably one of the only people who went traveling around Southeast Asia and thought I might become Catholic and need to be more serious about my Christian faith. I was also volunteering with the homeless at the time. Yeah, and some of my background was in documentary filmmaking on the production management side, and I'd wanted, as I had this kind of time and a bit of spare money, to see if I could make my own documentary. And I was reading some short stories by Flannery O'Connor, who I would recommend if you haven't read her, but she is a Catholic, but she grew up in Georgia in the US, and her work is quite looking at the faith tradition in the Bible Belt in the South. And I just thought, you don't really hear of Catholics in the South of the US. So I wonder why they choose to be Christian, but not like the other Christians.
Did you find many Catholics?
I interviewed over 20 people, and I happened upon quite a few others. And a lot of the churches were full and quite big sizes. I mean, the composition of the Bible Belt and the southern US has changed a lot because of migration. So there's quite big Hispanic communities in the South. So yeah, quite a lot of Catholics there.
And how did that moment of that documentary help in your decision to become Catholic?
I don't know if I have to kind of go back a bit maybe. So when I was doing research for the documentary, and originally it was quite sociological, so the Pew Research found that about 70% of people in the southern states that make up the Bible Belt are Christian. Only between 2 and 8% are Catholic. And so I thought, oh, who are these Catholics and what do they believe? So I started looking into what the differences of faith are in each different denomination. Then I started reading Teresa of Avila, who was very important in my conversion. And an Anglican friend of mine recommended Richard Rohr. So I listened to some of him too. So that gave me, and I realized, oh goodness, a lot of this is chiming with where I am right now in life. And then just being able to have these conversations with Catholics across the Bible Belt answered, some of my questions and made me see how deeply ingrained people's faith was, and also the great variety of faith that the Catholic Church offers. I mean, Catholic does just mean universal, but it undid some of my, I think, subconscious negativity towards Catholics, because growing up as a Baptist, it's very much, you know, Catholics worship Mary, Catholics worship the Pope.
Was there anyone who supported you on that journey?
Not everyone I met. I met quite a lot of people, but there were at least five people who I met during the documentary journey who continued to answer questions and have conversations with me. One, who is a wonderful lady in Chattanooga, Tennessee, remains my quote-unquote bonus mother. My parish priest in Canterbury, where I was in England at the time, was very supportive. And my dad is an Anglican vicar, and when I told him that I was becoming Catholic, he actually nearly fainted. But he could see how much stronger I became in faith the more I became Catholic, and he was very supportive for me. My mum was less so, and that was, again, part of, I think, when you're struggling with making a decision, having people kind of go against it can both be difficult and also strengthen your own convictions, because it makes you truly question them. And I think conversion is quite a serious decision, a decision that shouldn't be made lightly.
I think that is important in faith, to be able to ask those questions and to be able to like look at both sides and come to those decisions for yourself as well. Is there anything you wish you'd known before you became Catholic?
Thomas Aquinas says that God moves each of us according to our mode, and I think the way that I became Catholic is the way that I needed to become Catholic. What I wish I'd known is that some people can hold very strong opinions, and to just kind of not worry too much about what other people think.
I think that's really good advice in life generally, just not to worry too much about what other people think.
And also not to try and please everyone, and just try and find good friends who are in a similar place to where you are in terms of what your beliefs are, because to have your beliefs questioned by other Catholics can be very hard.
So you had the moment where you were confirmed into the Catholic Church, and received is the word I'm looking for, and then the next moment, were you thinking, okay, now I'm going to be a nun?
No, definitely not. I'd started RCIA, but I was still half kind of being like, this could just maybe help my research. I don't necessarily need to become a Catholic, but let's see where it goes. And I went to the US, and I hadn't committed to getting confirmed and received on Easter. In fact, I ended up getting received on Pentecost, but it was in New Orleans, so halfway through my trip, that I sent an email saying, yes, I'm ready to become a Catholic. But just before I went to New Orleans, in a place called St. Martinville, I had spent an evening in a convent. Then when I drove to New Orleans, the rain, the Louisiana rains, which are just almost like a waterfall, came down, and I just remember weeping in my car, praying out loud, dear God, please do not make me a nun.
And so far, he has answered that prayer.
That's what he has, yeah. And you can't actually begin the process of proper discernment until you've been a Catholic for 2 years.
Where was the point when you thought, maybe God is calling me to be a nun? I should clarify.
To be a nun, yeah. God's calling each of us, always. So when I was in Georgia, just outside of Atlanta, I stayed with some Trappists, and one of the brothers there said, I see you might be considering becoming a nun. And I was like, no, my prayer is, dear God, please do not make me a nun. He said, you can't think about that for 2 years. However, with the questions that you have, you might really get a lot out of studying theology. So yeah, when I got back to the UK, I began looking up theology courses and managed to get a scholarship to Ireland. And that's how I did that. And again, I just immersed myself in studying theology, and also just prayer life. And I got to know quite a lot of religious, and through a lot of that process, I really thought, you were all great, but this doesn't feel like it's right for me. Then when I came back to the UK in 2020, so at that point, it had been 2 years since I was confirmed, you know, COVID hit, you have much more time to think and to pray and to just despair, because I was like, oh, I was happy in Ireland. Why has all these things been taken away from me?
And I'm sure many people felt like that during lockdown as well.
Yeah, and I just felt quite lost. So I woke up one morning at 5:30 to pray, which I don't usually do, and I realize it sounds very nunny. And it felt like God was asking me, what do you want? And all I could respond was Jesus. Then I was like, no, what else do you want? But really, all that was coming up was Christ. I think at this point too, because it was early July, 4th of July, in fact, we weren't able to return to Mass, and I quite profoundly missed the Eucharist. And so that longing really came. And the other things that I was able to say, like, oh, I'd like to be able to write, and I'd like to see people again, because we were in lockdown. I was like, oh, you could do all of this in the convent. But just in that moment where my heart's answer was, I want Jesus made me think, okay, now's the time to really seriously look into religious life because you've been avoiding it to this point.
It sounds like you wanted to give your life to God in that time. Do you think that was a big part of it?
I mean, I still want to give my life to God, and I think we're not, you know, God's not limited to the convent or to professed religious.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah. And the prioress of the convent that I did discern with said the same thing. But I think it felt that I wanted to completely give myself to God in this quite radical way.
So while you were discerning, what was it for you that made you want to become a nun?
I don't know, probably I'd read too much Saint Therese or something like this. I was very drawn to the life. In Ireland, I volunteered with the homeless, and there was a Vietnamese sister there who was obviously not cloistered, but she knew a Vietnamese Carmelite and got me in touch with the Carmelites there. And from that, I got to help a different Vietnamese sister learn English. And so we'd both just, I'd help her with grammar and reading Lives of the Saints and things, but also I'd ask her about her life. So that made it feel less scary because you got to see that they are just people. And also I did my master's thesis on St. John of the Cross, who is a Carmelite, and St. Teresa of Avila is my confirmation saint, and her writings and thought was very important in my conversion and my, I think, formation as a Catholic. Then in terms of becoming a nun, all I can say is it just prayer. And I know that's quite a vague response, but it just felt like there was very strong conviction in prayer that God was saying, come and find me here now, like in the convent, in religious life, and that quite structured way of life. So I began praying the Liturgy of the Hours. So at least morning prayer, evening prayer, office of readings, and Compline, so night prayer.
I was just really struck by how you saying about God asking you to come to the convent for prayer resonated with me about the story of Abraham and how he was asked to take his son up to be sacrificed. But then when it came to it, God came up with an alternative plan, and it was God seeing if Abraham would do as he asked. And that's what you did. You did as God asked. So what did you learn from the experience?
You learn a lot about yourself. Which is hard, but good in a way too. I remember speaking to a different nun in a different order while I was discerning. I was like, I feel like I have been shown all of my faults. And she was like, what grace? And I was like, that's nice that you're able to see it so positively, because I'm quite paralyzed by this.
No one's perfect, Sophia.
No one is. Perfect is so far away from where I am there. Also just because Carmel is, I mean, all orders are an ecclesial vocation. You're joining it, it's quite a very specific part to the mystical body of Christ. But knowing that it was an ecclesial vocation, I realized I wanted to learn more about kind of the wholeness of the church. So I've peeked into a lot of different corners of the church. I learned too that you can't, I'd done a lot of research into Carmel in academia, but I realized it is very much a lived vocation, and you can't learn it from books. And also that I was a bit too hard. So I learned a lot about the gentleness of God and kind of how strictness, seeming strictness, can be a very caring action too. And also I just learned a lot more about different ways that people show love. You get that living community. And so the three pillars of Carmel are detachment, humility, and friendship, particularly forming a friendship with God. But you can only form friendship with God if you learn to be friends with other people. And I think detachment, humility, and learning to be a good friend are things that have been very valuable in the world.
I was struck when you were saying about learning about yourself, of the theory of there being four boxes, and there's being two windows. So there's a box that you can see into, which is like a row, and then there's a box that other people can see into. And so there's four boxes, and one is a box that only you can see into. And then there's a box that there's a row that you and others can see into. And then there's a box that only others can see into. And then there's this fourth box about you. So it's about looking at you, where nobody can see into. And it's about what God knows about you. And so I was just wondering if, when you were learning about yourself, were you learning more of the box that's just about you? Or were you learning more about the box that only God can see, that was moved into the stuff you can see now?
Well, one of my prayers was, Lord, help me to become myself as you have made me. So I think that does give you, you know, God did grant me some views of some of my strengths that I hadn't seen, or my gifts. So I guess little ways into that. But I'd say mostly I got a look at the window of how other people see me that I didn't necessarily see before, because in the formation, particularly when I did my 1 month's live-in, I'd have conferences with the novice mistress, who's kind of like your supervisor, and she would give certain feedback.
On that note, that comes back to my next question. So I personally discerned whether I was being called to religious life twice in my life, and very quickly got the answer was no, which I completely understand why. So then therefore I never really went down that discernment process. And can you explain to me a bit about how that works in reality?
Okay, so this will be quite just a practical point. So I felt the call, then I'm friends with a Carmelite priest. So I just messaged him and said, Father Tony, I think I might have a vocation. There is a particular Carmel that I've known of for a while, and I've done a bit more research into it. What do you think? And he said, pray about it, but if you're interested, just contact the prioress. So I did pray about it, and just sent an email to the prioress, and it was a very funny email. It was like, I'm a 29-year-old woman of relatively good health, and I think I might have a call to the Carmel. And I gave a bit more background about my life. Then she sent a reply and said, oh, well, thank you for getting in touch, and I know that is quite a courageous thing to do because it's unusual, and we'll just have an email conversation first for a while to get to know each other a bit more. Then perhaps you'll come and do a short stay in our guest house and come to meet us physically. So I'll say too that Carmel is a cloistered convent, so this would be different for apostolic hours. You can't leave the convent. So it's probably most people, when they think of nuns, would think of, you're not really allowed to leave the convent or the abbey.
And what's the purpose of that?
To create a kind of a radical closeness with God and to get rid of distractions like externally, so you could go more deeply internally too.
So that is quite a radical difference for you.
Yeah,
I'm what you were doing to things. So you were having
email conversations. Then she'd ask me about scripture, she'd ask me about my life, because again, every vocation is a call from God, but I think just physically the cloister is so different from modern life that I think it's sensible to kind of question people and get people thinking about that seriously, because I definitely had somewhat of a romanticized view of Saint Therese throwing roses everywhere and such like. So after a few weeks of conversation by email, I was invited to come and stay in their guest house for, I think, 4 days. And I'd participate there in their liturgy. So I'd go to it's 6 hours of prayer that they have and mass, but that was not from within the cloister. So I'd be in the public section, and then I would meet with the prioress and or the novice mistress just for a conversation for, I think, an hour a day too.
So you obviously enjoyed that.
Yeah. I mean, it was just kind of like a nice retreat.
So then what made you decide God wasn't calling you to that life in the end?
In the end, I'll have to kind of go back a bit. So after that, that was August. I was due to come in October, then COVID got worse. So it was delayed until the following July, August time. And thankfully, working for a Catholic organization, I was able to take the month off for a live-in. And the live-in was like being put through the spin cycle in a washing machine in certain ways. Because again, a lot of things come up. From my first visit, that was August of 2020. I did a live-in in July and August for a month, 2021, because of delays with COVID and also my working pattern at the time. And a lot of things came up in the while I was there, and it was very difficult because with so much silence, you can't escape from your thoughts. But also, I really felt like I came much closer to God through partaking in the Liturgy of the Hours, having these conversations with the different sisters, and just having the silent prayer. So in Carmel, what sets it apart is the contemplative or silent prayer for 2 hours a day. So it's 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour at night. And that's where, in a way, it's more being done unto than to like a kind of active praying. And there you really get to meet God, or I did. And it really felt that I understood in a much deeper way that God is love, and all we're really called to do is to love him back. But then you're also just cleaning and doing tasks and such like, and having these conversations with the novice mistress to help you discern. And I remember that on the final day, she said to me, with you, I just don't know. Because in certain ways, it's very much a yes. You love God very clearly. You love Carmel. But you know, on the other side, there were certain issues that I had to heal from. And I'd say that most people would benefit from counseling before or while deciding a religious vocation. Yeah, so she said, and you're also too close to things, so it's good to leave and see how you feel. And after I left, I really missed it and continued praying some of the hours and tried to be as much of a nun as I could while living in the world, which, to be fair, while we were still in light lockdown, was much easier. Then I went again in the November of 2021, so that was what, 3 or 4 months after I'd gone, and I really felt, yes, I want to become a nun, I'll say that I do. So I went and spoke to the novice mistress and said, oh, I feel like maybe it is a yes. But she said to me, you know, I've been thinking too, and my grandfather, for example, was diagnosed with dementia as soon as I came out the convent. I got a series of quite frantic emails from my family. And she said, I just think there's some healing that you need to do and various other things are coming up that you're not ready yet, and there's too much to see either way. Then I was like, oh, how's it going to affect with the aspirancy period? She's like, you know, it's fine. It's we'll figure it out. And but I think it will be at least 2 years before you're able to see.
How did you feel when you said about waiting for 2 years?
It was hard because it felt like a bit of a breakup or a rejection. But then I said to her, thank you, because you're right, I'm not ready. And just knowing that it is still an option, but like you giving me the space to heal from what I need to heal from and to figure things out that I need to figure out, because, you know, I'm an only child too. So there is certain considerations for your parents and practical things that you need to think about, that made me realize just how holistic they are as a convent. And how they look at you as a full person with a full life. You hear like the cloistered Carmelites, or you might read the Carmelites and think, oh, they're going to be a bit wacky and all spiritual, but they are some of the most brilliant women and most grounded women than people that I've ever met.
So what piece of advice would you give to yourself if you could go back to before the discernment of being a nun?
Be gentler with yourself, be more patient, and it's normal to be scared. But I think the way that I went about it, because I did also, so I think UK Vocations had some webinars, and different religious, both priests, apostolic sisters and nuns, were very generous with their time with me. And I was friends with a few people who were discerning. So for me, I'm an extroverted thinker, so it was good for me to talk it through with different people and to see how different people, different journeys are. And to not think that, oh, just because this person felt this way and I feel this way doesn't mean that one of us is called and another isn't.
I always find it fascinating listening to people's different stories of how God uses us when we're all so different.
Yeah, and the creativity of God, and how, like, if God can make us all so different, why are we trying to box God into certain ways?
Is there anything that you would change about your experience? And that, I mean, your whole becoming Catholic and then deciding being a nun and then deciding that's not what God's calling you to.
No, I don't think there is anything that I would change, just because I think on the whole I'm quite happy with where I am now and where my faith is now. And I wonder if I would be able to be in this place of, relatively speaking, like peace, had I not been on the quite tumultuous journey I'd been on. Like, I give thanks for the whole journey, and I think even or especially the difficult parts.
So now what's the plan? Where's discernment taking you next?
Oi, well, to a slightly more patient place. When I left the convent and the novice mistress was like, this is interesting that these are your three takeaways, I was really bothered that I couldn't draw, that I couldn't sing, and I couldn't I couldn't speak another language. So I took an art class, took singing lessons, now taking language lessons, and I very much enjoyed learning other languages. I mean, I'm hemming and hawing really between international development and academia, but just wherever the Lord wishes to take me, may I, you know, be open and listen.
Sounds like it hasn't been always the easiest of journeys to go on. But what are you grateful for from the experience?
All of it. All of it. I'm particularly grateful for being able to have so much time alone with the Lord and to listen and to get to know God as he truly is, rather than some unhelpful images that I had of him. And also, I think I was able to see a lot of the good in humanity.
Thanks, Sophia. That was great. And it's really always really interesting to hear of different people's discernment journeys. And, and sometimes we do have that moment on the journey where we think we're going in one direction and God is taking us there, but then actually we realize he wants us to go somewhere else. Thank you for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. In this episode, I love that Sophia talks about her openness to where God is calling her. And she talks about her experience of finding a God of love and gentleness, which is always a good reminder for me. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd love if you could forward it on to someone, and also get in touch with us if you have benefited from this conversation or there is a conversation that you would benefit from. So please email me at jcorcoran@thinkingfaith.org with any suggestions you have, and we'd be delighted to receive it. If you want to know more about this topic or anything we discuss, you can find resources on www.thinkingfaith.org.uk. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.